Hello and welcome back to another radio roundup from the Sunday podcast, brought to you guys by sportshoes.com. As always, loads to talk about today. Obviously, Project 222, Josh Kerr, did he shock the world? Maybe he shocked some of us. I think some of us were also giving him a good shot as well. So great to see him get over the line in London on Saturday. We'll talk about Keely as well. Back to winning ways, first race against Femke. And of course, as we teed up, we're going to chat about the BMC later on this episode. And we've got some guests coming on, don't we, Matt?
We do indeed. Looking forward to that. So we've got a lot to get through before we welcome Mr. Tim Brennan, co-chairman and a listener who has plenty of ideas of how the BMC can continue to remain on top. But yeah, we've got to just break this mile down first. I think almost Josh Kerr's first attempt at a record of this stature. Anyone's first attempt, really, in 25 plus years. Mm-hmm. And he does it on the day he says he's going to do it. And I think that is obviously very impressive. Sebco's called him Mahogany Heart, fully deserved. And when I look at Kerr, though, I think it should be very, very inspiring for a lot of athletes, because when you look at Kerr, he is obviously an extremely talented individual. I'm not saying he's not. You have to be to get to that level in the sport. But he actually also is someone who just works incredibly hard and every year finds a new way to ramp up his training. And when you saw him on Saturday, that was just 10 years coming together of just not cutting any corners, 100% committing to everything he does every single year. And I know last year, Worlds didn't quite come off, got a nasty injury. I know 2024 gets pipped by Hocker at the Olympic Games. But we are just watching a man who is just willing to, I think, from the outside, it's easy because Kerr, he's in our face. He reminds us of this. But he's willing to outwork everybody, and he's willing to do it his way as well. He is not, and the best are never, they're never confused. They're never sort of brainwashed by other things going on out there. They found their path and they stick to that. But yeah, that is what for me struck me most about Kerr's performance is, you know, this is a guy just for the last 10 years who has just trained like a beast, like a Brooks beast that he is. And he's got himself in a position where he can attack that record and then deliver as well.
Yeah, we were talking on Saturday, weren't we, after the meet, and we kind of compared him to Farah, right, in terms of he's got himself to the point where he's one of the best in the world, like he's making finals. And then we see almost this shift in Kerr where he goes from being an NCAA record holder and someone who's going to start making 1500 meter teams for Britain to someone that has locked in, like you say, for 10 years to eke out every last bit of performance so he can perform.
Yeah.
Right at the top.
And look at this year. To do this mile world record, it's now come out that this was his idea. He pitched this to Brooks. He pulled a PowerPoint presentation together, for God's sake, strolls into Brooks. This is what I want to do, and this is how much it's going to cost. Brooks then kit his house out with the altitude room. I presume that was part of the costs that he forecast. But, you know, and it's how many people, you know, we've seen out people going altitude camps, and we've seen, I do remember the NOP definitely used to have a few altitude rooms as well. Like, altitude rooms are a thing, but yeah, he's going just an extra level. He's making sure that he is doing all those little things. You know, I know him and Danny, they're on the data all over with Amazfit. How much of that is a marketing stunt? I don't know, but they're just their attention to detail. And, you know, they've got an incredible athlete in Kerr, but he is by no means the most talented 1500 meter runner we've ever seen. And I think even Kerr would probably admit that. Mm. But he is willing to work harder than everyone else. Maybe that's unfair. He's willing to work harder and smarter. And actually, you look at an athlete, when you look at the 1500 mile rankings at the moment, many of the best guys have had a injury or two. Probably in the last 5 years, we've seen, you know, Laos seems to be a bit banged up at the moment. Hocker's had his moments. Jakob's obviously had his moments. Nagusa has his moments. There's been guys who have been a bit up and down with injury, and Kerr is probably the one who has been the most consistent. He hasn't had, I can't remember Kerr ever having, a long-term injury. I know off the back of the 2021 Olympics, he celebrated a bit too hard, took him longer to get back into shape, had a few problems, still runs 3:30 at the World Champs that year. In Eugene, like, and I know he was injured.
Last year was a bit of a freak accident, wasn't it? Obviously, like, turned on his ankle a bit, didn't he?
Yeah, had a horrible calf ankle problem in the actual race itself. But I think that's another reason why Kerr was able to attack this record, and he's just steadily improved each year because he's probably out of everyone in the 1500 mile rankings right now. He's been the most consistent year on year. Over the last, I'm talking, I mean, 2019, he made a world final with Doha. So I'm talking over the last sort of, 5 to 8 years.
Yeah. Well, I think Kerr, he's someone that he looks to, I remember when we spoke to him, he looks to other sports for, I guess, inspiration around how much you can lock in. I remember we spoke to him and he spoke so much about how he loves that sort of MMA boxing style camp prep for a bout. And that's how he treated this record. It was like, right, I'm going to go in, I'm going to lock in, and I'm going to do absolutely everything for this period of time, rather than worrying about, okay, I'm going to have a season and I'm going to do this and that here and there. It's like, no. And you can just imagine the past 8 weeks, 10 weeks, maybe even longer, the guy's been so, so dialed in. And I think we actually don't see it that much in athletics. I think perhaps maybe that's unfair again. Like, I think people like Kipchoge.
Kipchoge, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I think the way he looks to some other sports for some of that stuff, and I think definitely it's something that NOP used to do. Whatever you want to say about them and their training, but they did push the limits in terms of using all the tech, using all. Every resource they had available to them, they would dial that up to the max. But then you still got to go out and perform on the day. That's the thing. So he's had all this prep, amazing. He's had all this support, but
he's incredible at that.
He just looked phenomenal, didn't he?
And to be fair to Kerr, he's always been good at that. You think anything that he has set his sights on, whether it's an NCAA record, achieves it, whether it's beating Chez in the NCAA, Chez's first defeat in God knows how long, he achieves it. Wins the NCAA outdoors, makes those teams early on in his career that he wants to make, gets an Olympic medal, then obviously becomes a world champion a couple of years after that. You know, world indoors, you know, I think that was in the 3000. Very impressive, stepping up in distance when we haven't really seen him do that before a couple of years back in Glasgow. Like, when he sets his sights on something, he seems to be the best at delivering. And he sets himself up, like, I'm sure there's a lot of people who don't like her. You know, at times, he probably is quite difficult to like for a lot of people. I mean, I respect his tenacity and his self-confidence. I mean, it's unrivaled. But you're right, I think he does look to other sports quite a lot. And what is it, Ali used to say, I'm the greatest. I said that even before I knew I was. You know, he speaks things into existence. Yeah. Ali. And I think Kerr does a lot of that as well.
And people are a bit apologetic in... Athletes are a bit apologetic, I think, in our sport, in that they feel like they can't do that and shouldn't do that. But Kerr's created this aura around him that makes other athletes fear him. And they're thinking, I can't beat that guy, right?
Look, Jakob's the same, actually.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Jakob, and the reason why they butt heads is they're cut from the same cloth. They both think they are the best thing since sliced bread. And I think you have to, because when you step on the start line against those guys, you're going, he's not mentally vulnerable, you know, so I'm going to have to outright beat this guy physically. And that is very, very difficult as well, because, you know, for the last 5, 6, 7 years, they have been one of the best in the world. So look, what did we make of the plaudits will continue to rain for Kerr, I think. And the Commonwealth Mile is going to be very exciting. Can he sort of deliver, and how will he run that race is more going to be the question. Obviously, he's going to be up against Whiteman. He pulled out of the eight. We hope everything's okay with him. Recovering. So, and it looked like Wanyonyi was tired. So probably a good shout that Jake did pull out of that eight. Wanyonyi looked leggy. But yeah, how Kerr runs that against the likes of Myers, against the likes of Whiteman. Chariot is also in great form as well. Will be very intrigued.
Yeah, the nice thing about Kerr is he can almost run it any way he likes. And I think they'll have a plan. And I don't think it will just be, I'm the fastest in the field, so I'm going to go and run a super fast time. It'll be a measured effort from 500, 600 out.
Oh, yeah.
But it'll be positioned perfectly throughout. as we've seen before. But yeah, there'll be some good athletes in there, and it'll be a good race. I guess one of the things that goes a bit under the radar is his 1500 meter split, right? New PB,
327,
and yeah, pretty high up on the all time list there as well. I think one thing we got to start talking about is he going to go for the 1500 meter world record? Is he capable of the 1500 meter world record? I mean, by how he looked with 109 meters to go, you'd think he's got another, what, a second and a half in there.
Yeah, and Danny Mackey spoke about this in a few interviews since the race, and I'm not sure, considering how dialed in they were for this mile world record, Danny Mackey said, I think Josh Kerr's next viable attempt would be in 5 weeks. And his words were like, "Oh, that's tough," you know, to sort of hold that level of focus, that level of fitness that no one in the world has ever been able to get to before, you know, to hold that form for another 5 weeks. He'll have the Commonwealth mile in there as well that he'll have to negotiate, taper for, recover off of, etc. So I don't know if they were gonna, if they believed this, the stars can align in the same way it did in London. So I don't know if they're going to attempt it, but obviously we're going to see more of him, whether it be in Diamond Leagues, whether it be that World Ultimate, and see him sort of like try and dominate there. I guess what he needs to be careful of now is, you can imagine the media and everyone, if one, he loses the Commonwealth mile, and two, if he does go to a Diamond League and gets beat, I can't see it myself, but if he does get beat towards this back end of the season, it's like, this guy can only do one race. You know what people are going to say. He can't race.
But then equally, that's what he's been training for. Because if he's been training for a season, I think you can then make some of those, some of those criticisms. But this is what's we loved about Kerr, is he said, this is what I'm aiming for. That's when I'm peaking. And so actually, who cares? Like, I'd love to have a good commies race, and it's going to be really interesting. But
yeah,
Personally, I'm not going to then think, he's a one-hit wonder if he goes and gets beat in every single race he does for the rest of the season, because I'm like, no, he set out, like, he could shut his season down now and he's had an unbelievable year.
Yeah.
It's no different, almost for me, it's like, well, there's no Olympics, and actually, like we always say, obviously some people mess it up a little bit and then don't qualify, but when the Olympics is in town, you got one race that ultimately matters.
Yeah.
If you're that standard, where you're going to make the final.
Yeah. And I would say a lot of the guys last year in a different space to Kerr, you know, a lot of them went to the Worlds, performed, got their medal, ran fast last year. Last year was a big year for many, and it came off the back of 4 years of just consistent champs back to back to back. And so this year was always going to be, you know, you look at the likes of Hocker and people like that, and I know he's had his problems, his injuries, even the Goose. I think there is quite a lot of mental fatigue and burnout in that 1500 mile at the moment, and I think that's just off the back of just some really hard years for a lot of those guys. And so Kerr, out of everyone, because the way he walked off the track or hobbled off the track last year at the Worlds, I think he was able to get really excited and motivated, and he knew he could attack that record. There's probably only two. If Hocker wanted to attack that mile record, he probably could have done. Jakob's been injured, so he wasn't in a position to do it. So there's probably only two guys in the world, Hocker and Kerr, who could realistically say, I'm attacking this mile world record. I'm not sure anyone else would have had
I think the difference with Hocker would have needed a race where he was required to run that to win it, to get that performance out of him.
Exactly, because he's just not that. Yeah, I believe as well. He's just not that way inclined. He's just not that athlete. He is a real racer, is Hocker. So I think Kerr this season has been able to get himself really motivated, whereas a lot of people are like, oh yeah, I'm aiming for the World Ultimates, and how much are they aiming for it? You know, like how compared to if it was a World Champs.
Yeah,
We'll get onto the World Ultimate in a bit, but yeah, very. And the other thing we should pick up is, when you watch this and you see Nagus is an incredible athlete. He still runs 3:45. He has run 3:43 for the mile.
I was impressed by how long he lasted, to be honest.
I was impressed by how long he lasted. But when you watch it, it is just, even if you've never watched mid-distance running in your life, you're like, well, yeah, it's obvious. Look at that guy versus look at Nagus. And of course, Kerr's going to beat Nagus. Mm-hmm. It just the Kerr's stride, the power. You know, this guy was getting just 100% back from the track. Like, the energy return he was getting back. Mm-hmm. Like, he was just so strong. And you're like, okay, yeah, if you were to design a mid-distance, right, it'd be Kerr. And the way he moves, Yeah, you know, it's flawless.
Yeah.
And then you look at the Goose and you're like, well, he's just a lot greener. He's got a long language stride. You know, his arms come across his body a bit. They're quite relaxed. And you're like, is the Goose going to address those areas? Does he recognize, you know, he's not carrying anywhere near as much muscle as someone like Kerr is either. Like his power is never going to compete with Kerr on that front. But obviously he has run incredibly fast and Noguse has done incredible things. But when you watch that mile on Saturday, you're like, God, when Kerr gets in this shape, there's no way someone like Noguse can ever compete with him. And I wonder if, you know, people like Chariot and all those other guys as well sort of look at that and go, yeah.
Well, that's it. Like, speaking of MMA, if they'd done a weigh-in on Friday night, I think I'd have been like, well, yeah, of course he's going to run this record. He looked absolutely ridiculous.
Like, that's years of having a chef, mate, and weighing
he just looked phenomenal. Like you say, like the muscles on the guy. He just looked perfect, didn't he?
Yeah, that's what shape your life looks like. Hey, further back in this mile, as I mentioned, the Goose, you know, just couldn't match him. Jake Hayward comes through in third, takes down Robert Farkin, 3:46.7 for Hayward. Big PB for the guy.
Welsh record.
Welsh record. Incredible run from Hayward. And
it's good for him that it goes under the radar as well, I think. It's good to do it in a race like that.
It's more like he's beaten Farkin, who is a guy who's regularly run is Farkin a 3:30 man? I think he is, you know, 3:30 guy, written very, very consistent on a Diamond League. He's beaten someone like Ethan Strand, who was hyped to be the next best thing. I mean, the Americans are struggling. It was GB versus America. You take out Farkin and we won. It was quite funny how it went, actually. Kerr, the Goose, Hayward, Farkin, Nate Green, Ali Ludwig, Ethan Strand, Tom Keane, Sam Preckle, Archie Davies. Archie Davies comes lasted 3:51.0, which is still an incredible time and a PB for him. But was 2 seconds or a second and a half off the back there. Tom Keane, sub 3:50, 3:49. So what a day for British miling, giving these developing athletes a chance, giving them a lane. And it's paid off at the London Diamond League. It always does. The man who DNF'd, Simeon Burnbar. Been a long season for him.
Yeah. I don't mean we can blame him coming off the back of that US season, but I think, Hayward, classy run. I've seen that he's, as ever, he's ambitious, and he said he wants to go to the commies and do everything he can to win. And don't think we expect anything else from that guy. In terms of saying he's going to do that, the guy believes in himself, believes that he can go and be a world beater, can be a Kerr in a few years' time, right? I guess the question is, do they pick Hayward for Euros or do they go with Arlo?
Yeah, I mean, Arlo still ran an incredible race, still runs 3:48. This is a guy who is actually showing that he's getting better and better and better and better. So for me, you go with Arlo, there's no question. You have to put some weighting on that British title as well. And it's going to be difficult because I know Hayward has that experience. He's got that European medal. There's a world where, to be honest, Kerr doesn't race. There's a world where both of them go, actually. And I think that will, Kerr, I don't think will do it. So take him out of the question. So yeah, maybe you've got Whiteman in there. And then, so it's just easy. It's Whiteman, it's Hayward, it's Arlo. And I think that's what they'll do. I think that will probably be the team, the way things are shaping up. And yeah, just a note on Hayward. Where's that put him on the British all time? I think that makes him the fastest. The only guy quicker than him is over the mile is Steve Cram. Obviously Kerr as well, but yeah, from the old guard, which is very impressive. Goes quicker than George Mills back in 2023. And look what he has run over 1500.
Yeah. I thought we were going to see Mills this season. What's happened to that?
We have seen him. He snuck under the radar. He ran 8:05 for 3K in, I don't know where it was. I watched it. Yeah. Was yeah, crappy conditions. But 8:05 for 3K. Yeah. He hasn't proved fitness, old Mills. Right. So I don't think we'll see him. His whole storyline was needed to prove fitness ahead of Europeans. And so I don't think we see him. Hey, mate, look, let's get on to the women's eight. Keely Hodgkinson wins, back to winning ways. So Keely beats Femke Bol, maybe a psychological boost. I actually think the boost is with Femke. Talk of self-confidence. Femke is a serial winner. She's a champion, but she is doubting herself way too much in the 800. She always looks supreme. I did watch this race a couple times, and she's clearly finding it difficult to sort of run behind people. That's yeah. especially when the pace is, when they're going through sort of 55 and it's quite quick, there's a lot more space for Femke as well. But you could see a couple of the girls, I can't remember who was trying to lean in on her a little bit, coming on Femke around the bottom bend. It was one of the athletes anyway, and she didn't like that. She was finding a bit uncomfortable in that. So it's going to be interesting what Femke does in the heat. She just needs to go, for me, full Rudisha mode on this. Stop pissing about, stop running in packs, and just get to the head of this race. Like, you're the fastest over 400, Femke. You are going to be very, very difficult to overtake. And her last 100 is looking stronger and stronger.
She needs to commit to like a 54 first lap.
I think 55, something like that. And when they panned in on the facial expressions, you know, they go on like close up down the home straight. Keely is straining. She is tense. Probably not quite panicking, but compared to Femke is virtually nasal breathing, man. And I was like, I think, and Femke, when she finished, she just walked off the track. She didn't look tired. She wasn't staggering about. And for me, this was Femke getting a match on Keely. Could she have won that race? Look, that's obviously a bit stupid to say because she didn't win the race, but it did look like actually Femke's objective was just to go up against Keely, see what the Europeans might be like, see where she needs to attack, and just get used to, yeah, a slightly different race, more bodies in there. I think she's fit enough to really do some damage at the Europeans and challenge. I'll say it. Like, I think she can challenge. I don't think she's going to win gold, because I think Rivera is going to win gold, but she can definitely challenge for silver.
Of course she can. Of course she can. I mean, she can challenge for gold, right? I think that the issue with Vero is...
If Vero's in the shape she's in now, I doubt.
That's what is she still in that shape? Is she still going to be in that shape? Yeah. When you run that well, that early, or that far out from the champs, it's great, but we're talking about... We meant talking like Kerr earlier and thinking, oh, can he hold this for 5 weeks to have another record attempt? That's so hard to do. And whether she realized it or not, Vero was in supreme shape early doors.
Mm.
So we shall see. I think she's doing the smart thing about kind of avoiding some of these diamond leagues and making sure
there is none now.
Gets herself ready. So
yeah, that's it for the diamond leagues. There isn't any now. But yeah, you're right. I was very impressed with Femke. I know the time wasn't anything to sort of get too excited about in that women's eight.
What did you think of Keely's interviews afterwards?
I'm superhuman. I'm not superhuman.
Yeah, and just kind of, it was fine. Like,
I thought her and Kerr did a great interview. I actually haven't seen too many, sort of mixed zone interviews from Keely. I watched the BBC coverage, yeah, obviously, like everyone did. And when her and Kerr were standing next to each other, and I think he did an amazing job of just hitting it home to Keely, saying, look, you know, what you do week in, week out. And it is, you know, everyone used to sort of look at Jakob and just go, oh, like, he just wins all the time. You know, it's a given. And Keely's doing that. I don't know how many diamonds she's won, but it must be a ridiculous number now.
I think that was 50 sub twos.
50 sub twos.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I mean, sub two isn't even a question with Keely. It's like sub 156 is her measure of a good or a bad run.
Yeah.
Now, so she's incredible thing. She is obviously just still in very good shape, but just vulnerable now. And that's the nature of the 800. And, you know, whenever you go into a championship, it's a good thing, really. But I think she's just adjusting to that, to the pressures of things she can't control. Early on in her career, she was still developing, so I think it was easier to sort of cope with. It was like, oh, well, in many ways, Keely was a bit of an underdog still. She'd never won a world title, or still hasn't. But so when she went into sort of the world champs and the Euros and stuff, it was like, okay, well, you know, I'm expected to do well here and win. But everyone recognized that she maybe wasn't a, you know, world beater, dominator. But she is now. And I think she's just coping with the fact that Vera's, there's, she can't control what other athletes are doing, like Vera and Femke.
Yeah, I do think it's more of a mental thing than a physical thing with Keely. I think she's just, like you say, she's realized how well these other girls are moving and is now concerned that she is beatable rather than it being that she's not. I'm sure like she's at the point where within 4 or 5 weeks she could get herself like in pretty perfect shape. I think she's always in that kind of physical shape, but it's the unbeatability, if you like, and the invincible for Keely is just gone a bit,
and that's what she's coping with.
Mm.
Yeah, she's and for me, she's still not quite racing. She beats Femke on the weekend, no problem, but she's going to need to smarten up, and she's going to need to think of a tactic. How do I beat Vera? Whereas I think previously for Keely, the last couple of years have just been gungos.
Again, the best shape, yeah.
Gungos, I got to get to that finish line as fast as possible and I win.
Yeah.
Whereas that's not enough. She needs to figure out some sort of tactic in order to beat Vera, in order to beat her training partner, Georgia Bell, as well. 156.2 on the weekend. Georgia Bell ran 155.9 at British Champs solo. Mm-hmm.
But
that track's the fastest track in the world, yeah. The London Diamond League. Like Brandon Miller ran 142.1, for God's sake.
But Georgia Bell wasn't ready to run on the weekend. Georgia Bell's not quite there either.
No, but all I'm saying is I think Keely will know that. She's not stupid. She knows that London track is probably the fastest track in the world, or one of them. The stadium, the crowd are amazing, huge opportunity. And yeah, all I'm saying now is for Keely to win the Europeans, she needs to have more in her locker to just get from A to B as fast as possible. Because yeah, I think,
agreed.
unless she runs a world record,
yeah,
or unless she runs a PB, and maybe, you know, if you run 153 high, I imagine you probably will win the Europeans.
Yeah. Talk about Kerr's team though, and Kerr's prep being pretty good.
Jenny and Trevor
around her again though. She has the facilities to get it to that place for the Europeans. So yeah, be interesting. It's so exciting for us, right? In this 800 is going to be.
Yeah.
We just hope Georgia Bell's in it, don't we? So that it's just another name in that hat. Obviously, we didn't get the Phoebe Gill performance all over the Phoebe L that we wanted, but focusing on juniors for now.
Why not World Juniors? World Juniors might be next week. I think World Juniors is soon, actually. I'll definitely watch that. Here, mate, just before we get Mr. Tim Brennan on, we will touch upon Brandon Miller and that Brooks Beast Club, because he looked absolutely phenomenal. 142.1. He's featured in a couple of Kerr's workouts, by the way, or maybe it was just a Brooks Beast workout, but he's done some pretty impressive sessions himself. Seems like a very cool guy. Obviously, used to be an NCAA star as well. Comes through that NCAA system. I think he was an NCAA champ, actually, in the 800. But it's taken him a few years. And again, it says, and this is what I like about Brooks, is they all seem to sign pretty long contracts. Pretty big, pretty long contracts, as if to say, yeah, the professional game, I can't expect to be an NCAA star and then just start winning medals at a major championships. It is especially when you're an athlete from the US, like Miller, like even just making teams is difficult. He's only made a couple, but even with Kerr, like they've played the long game, and to be fair to Brooks, when they have an athlete, they invest in that athlete. And I mean, all the brands recruit on potential, right? But I think Brooks take that to another step up as well. They don't just look at your black and white times and say, okay, this is what.
Well, they even gave the athlete special a year, didn't they? Do you remember that?
I think that came out of marketing budget. Yeah. But yeah, I really rate Brooks for that, and I hope they get a lot of credit. They've definitely got a lot of eyeballs off the back of this record. And Danny Mackey now proving that always, you know, whenever you see a coach get two athletes basically in Miller beat, best 800 meter runner in the world in Wanyonyi, Kerr runs a world record. When you get two athletes in that sort of shape, you clearly are one of the best coaches in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, we'd love to get Danny Mackey on, wouldn't we, mate?
We would, fingers crossed. And then one more news snippet is the World Ultimate Championship broadcasting structure. Many of you may have seen already. Obviously, the World Ultimates, they're stripping back a lot of events, so there won't be many of the field events. Obviously, it won't be the 10,000, it won't be the steeple. There's a few, maybe they've taken out a few hurdle races, I can't remember. But there's a couple of events that won't be happening at the World Ultimates, which is a shame. stripped back version of the world champs, but they really want to basically, I think, Grand Slam walked so World Athletics can run, because all of their changes are to do with the broadcast itself and how they present track and field. And we've always said, like, they do need to change the way they present our sport.
Yeah.
It's just not gripping enough when you sit and watch it on the TV. But apparently they've, Noah Lyles has basically helped them come up with a plan, as well as a broadcasting company. But big changes. The day before the event, they're going to have more of an informal meetup. They'll obviously still have a formal press conference, but more of an informal meetup. A little bit like it reminded me of the Marathon Majors, when they get the athletes and they're just all sitting in those rooms and you can go down to a table and interview an athlete. I think it's going to be a lot more like that. Red carpet arrivals. I mean, that is very Noah Lyles. So athletes are going to, it's going to be like the Grammys when they rock up to the press conference. They're going to have a big opening ceremony and stuff like that. And then the actual racing itself, apparently there's not going to be a timetable as such. They're going to sort of run it to what's happening, and they're going to do large, big athlete intros, lots of focus, lots of VTs. One field event is only going to happen, is going to take place at one time. And they said they're going to do center court style interviews. The first of its kind, huh? Ewan Thomas does...
They're all the time.
He does interviews at British Champs all the time. So, there's basically, it's just going to be more razzmatazz.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see how that all unfolds. For now, though, let's get Tim on the pod and chat about a BMC.
Hey, Tim.
All good. Thanks yourself. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Pleasure.
Tim, we were talking a little bit last week. I don't know if you heard, but about, obviously, you sent me over those stats post the... Watford Diamond League, I should say. 50 men sub, or 27 men, sorry, sub 150, wasn't it? Something in that region. And so it got us talking just about the depth of the BMC and what it's become, how it just dominates the track and field calendar now throughout the whole year, 30, 40 plus meetings. We obviously want to ask about your role at the BMC and how you got involved, but I think the main topic of discussion for us is how the BMC has grown into such a beast and where can it go next. But before we get there, do you want to just share your role in the BMC and what you do, Tim?
Well, I am a long-standing member. I joined the BMC as a kid when I was 13 or 14 back in the 70s as an athlete. And then when I was stopping my running career, I thought it'd be great to organise a meeting. The first one I did was at my home track at Sutton, where I could still be the pacemaker, which I couldn't do now for sure. And then I sort of got grabbed into it to be a Grand Prix organiser, and then became chairman, and now I'm co-chairman with Mike Deegan, who's come in the last couple of years, which is very welcome.
Being a co-chairman, how many hours a week does that? Because I look at you, Tim, and I chuckle when I think about it. How many emails do you get a week of athletes wanting to move races and get in a faster race?
It becomes an avalanche in the days after you publish the first seedings, and everybody has been on the, looked up their stats. They found someone there faster than in the race above them. And they don't point out the five people who they're slower than in the race they're in. So, that's always an interesting moment. But it's a huge commitment. I stopped, proper paid work a couple of years ago. And, the BMC's become a bit of a, bit too much of a full-time job, so it's hours and hours at the best of times, and in the weeks running up to a Grand Prix, it's really intense.
Does that mean you're in a bit of an irreplaceable rut at the moment? Like, do you worry about someone, your co-chairman at the moment, do you worry about someone coming in and being able to do what you guys do?
I think that's vital, that we're always bringing in new people, and we've done that quite a bit over the last few years, and you have to remember that the BMC is sort of dependent 95% on volunteer activity. So, some of the people who've come in are like me, people retiring, a lot of them with very successful careers and very able and good at organizing things. But it's also important that we bring in a younger generation of people. And now, you know, the hubs are all represented in what the BMC is doing with the coaches there who are directly in touch with the athletes. And, you know, we must keep that. The BMC is part of the community, and we have to keep that link close with the athletes so that what we're doing is the right thing for them. And I should say as well, you know, an innovation in the last few years was the record breaker meetings. And we did at Bracknell and at Oxford, at Tooting, at St Mary's. And, you know, that brings in another bunch of good people who are organising the meetings and have been good enough to see the BMC as the vehicle by which they'll do with that and be part of an expanding community.
Yeah. I guess, Tim, one of the things we wanted to chat about, Matt and I kind of mentioned last week, that it's got to the point where as athletes who are just below that kind of elite level,
yeah,
you could base your whole season around BMC meets, right? So how have we got to this point where you guys have done such a good job that you now have that monopoly right over the whole race calendar in a way?
Yeah, I don't know about that. You know, the calendar is often a big argument, but it's I mean, if you look at the BMC, you know, the mission hasn't changed. The mission was to try and make British middle distance running as good as it could be, the best in the world. And the way of doing that hasn't changed, as it being a community that comes together where athletes of the same standard race each other, and where coaches get together to share knowledge. But, you know, the environment has changed completely. The club's changed completely. So when the BMC started, it would have been 200 people, very tough to join. The athletics environment then was a lot of one-off meetings, trophy meetings, and the BMC would have one or two races within that meeting as like the premier event. You know, then in the 90s, the club decided to lower the entry standards and expand to be 2,000 people, which it is today. And that meant we could start organising our own meetings. So you have the Grand Prix, you have the Record Breakers, the PB Classics. And that really does mean that we can provide a ladder for people to progress up, to go from being good club level and up to being, you know, top international level. And you know, you can see that 1500 meter F race at Sport City, Jake Whiteman versus Josh Kerr, you know, who knew where that would lead to. But you know, they took their early steps in progressing up that ladder.
So many do, and we're just talking World Juniors coming up, and I know many have used the BMC to get their qualifying times for those World Juniors. Do you see any threat to the BMC? What is going to potentially just be a thorn in the BMC's side, because it is growing so big, and we talk about the calendar, and you know, county champs are virtually non-existent now. I know they still take place. SALs, NALs are half of what they used to be. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing that the BMC have all these races and those others haven't really managed to survive. I know they still take place. But yeah, what are the threats to the BMC in the next 5 years, Tim?
Well, I mean, if you look at it, the number of races the number of meetings has topped out at about 50. And we haven't gone above that for, the last... Well, that is the max, you know, and it's been round about that for the last 10 years. So, you know, we're not trying to do more and more. If you do too much, you get away from the idea of people coming together to race each other, because it's diluted over too many races. A threat is this keeping the beast, as you say, going and having the people to do that. I think we also have to look at how far up the ladder we want to go, and World Athletics is changing the rules. You've got these really tough standards to qualify for the World Championships, which is kind of aimed at pushing people into their hierarchy of events. So, you know, BMC is running five challenger events. They're the only challenger events in England, but going forward, it's bronze level meetings that people need to do qualifications on. So, you know, that's something that we have to think about, is how do we try and do a bronze level meeting? You know, but that's a massive undertaking. It's already a big rule book for the World Challenger and the things that you have to do, and to go to bronze would require, you know, more money, but also a lot more organizational effort. And is that something we can do and something we want to do without, because we don't want to lose the ethos of the meetings and what they are, that it is this ladder of progression. And if you're good enough, you get in the race that you're due to come into, and you can progress up, and eventually you'll be in the A race. And if you win an A race, you're a la Ludwig, and you go on to the Diamond League and win the national championship.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you make around, I guess, trying to service that top end, because I think probably around 2010, maybe there was probably still chances for athletes to qualify for a major through a BMC, through a gold standard maybe, or through a Grand Prix meet, and the times have just got so crazy that it's not possible anymore. But is that something that has to be a next step for the BMC? I mean, the way the weather in the UK in the summer is improving. Coming to the UK might actually be more viable than athletes going to other places where it's going to get too hot. In Europe,
I don't see why you can't run fast times in the UK. And you know, one thing that the BMC always does is try to go to the fast tracks. You know, so that's why we're at Trafford, why we're at Watford. You know, they're not the most glamorous venues, but they're the fastest tracks, right. And athletes know that. I think you can make it happen. I'll, you know, part of it is about picking dates as well. So if you look at the St. Mary's Grand Prix coming up, you've got some really exciting fields, because the European Championships kicks off the day after the BMC Grand Prix, and the European athletes will be in that. But all the guys who've done the Commonwealths from Australia and Canada, and US athletes who are over here are looking for races. So we got some stunning entries for that. I was just looking at the 1500 meters women, which is Sarah Billings, Gabriella DeBus Stafford, and Lucia Stafford. So that's three people in or under 4 minutes in a BMC race, you know. So it can happen, and that is at that qualification level. So I wouldn't dismiss it at all. But you're absolutely right to raise it. You know, what we want is to get people up that ladder, and, you know, you can go and get in a gold meeting or a Diamond League, and you'll see you run 2 or 3 seconds faster as Arlo has.
He certainly has. Tim, obviously the BMC takes care of the 800, 1500. We've seen a step up in distances as well. I know it was a report that came out, or you guys are wanting to have a little bit more of an impact on the 5000 as well. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Neville Taylor actually started this off. Building up the 5000. And again, you know, we're a club. We're about making British middle distance better. You know, you could say, if we were a promoter, we'd say, let's just do 8s and 15s. But you want to make the 5000 better. So we did that at Birmingham University. Dean Miller put in a hell of a lot of effort in getting together a very good 5,000 meter field. So, you know, you guess that we're getting results in the 1320s now, but you need to go further. I mean, basically, you know, the standards in our races have stayed the same and world's got better. So, you know, that is something that we've got to work on. I'm sure we'll come back to that and we'll put more effort into it. We'll put more money in it. Same in the steeplechase. And, you know, Luke Gunn is very active in the BMC, and we had, and ultimately, didn't work for Will Battersill at Watford, but, you know, a fantastic effort at getting the European qualification. So, you know, we'll keep doing the steeplechases as well, and the women's steeplechase, where sometimes you have thin fields, but, you know, you've got to support the athletes who show up and want to race, and try and make sure that a few more people get in there. And I think, you know, a lot has been talked about that the environment when you have really strong 1500 meter runners in the country, encouraging some of them to convert to steeplechase, which is recreating the 1980s when, you know, Mark Rowland was a great 1500 meter runner, but he was around in the area when there were world greats doing it. So he went and did the steeplechase and got an Olympic medal. And, you know, you want some of those guys to think about 1500 and 5000, who are the top 1500 meter runners. Because once again, it's such a competitive event to get international selection for.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I guess just before we kind of finish up, Tim, like, what do you think is next in terms of modernizing? You mentioned maybe some of these bronze meets. Is there a world where the BMC has kind of a series winner for the Grand Prix? Is there a finals day, like, officially? I guess to bring back some of the, I think what Matt and I feel like we've lost maybe is we don't see as many people at your England champs, your county champs. The BMC does an amazing job at getting people their personal best, but can the BMC, I guess, go one step further and actually provide competitive racing opportunities as well, similar to a championship, as part of their, I guess, catalogue of meets that you guys have got?
I mean, I think, you know, it's a little bit misunderstood that the BMC 100% supports championship racing. And in fact, you know, that's the way the calendar is constructed. You know, when do we need to put a fixture so those people can qualify for the UK champs? When do we need to put a PB Classic so that people can get in the English Schools champs? So, and, you know, maybe we need to make it louder, but absolutely coaches should be telling athletes to do championships. And you know, I was quite sad to see the fields in the England championships. And I think more people should be doing that. So maybe we can work with the championship organisations better to support that. You know, we're sort of guilty of providing what the athletes want. People want to come and run fast times, but again, you know, the main thing is competition. You know, pacemaking is important, but it's the fact that you're in a race with, and everybody's run within fractions of a second of each other. We had four people finish the 800 meters C, separated by thousandths, not hundredths, you know. So it's incredibly competitive, and those are competitive races, and I honestly believe they're the best way to prepare for championships, because you're racing your fellow UK athletes and you're aiming to come out on top, and that is exactly what you need to run in the UK champs or the England championships.
I 100% agree with you in terms of, I'm not saying the BMC doesn't help athletes prepare or qualify for some of these competitions. I actually think you're just in a place now where you're doing such a good job and you have such an audience that actually could some of your meets be a championship race almost. Because like you say, the athletes want to go and compete at BMC, and they see more value in that than maybe their England champs or their county champs, and perhaps that's too far gone. I think it would be great if you guys could work together and try and salvage it, but I think we kind of feel the England champs perhaps is too far gone now. The British champs will survive, the English schools will survive, but is there somewhere where the BMC could have certain meets that are without pacers, or at least there's an A race without pacers that you qualify for in a certain way, and this prize money or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good thought. You know, it's something that we need to look at. There have been, you know, series winners. We did do prizes for series winners, and we don't do that now. And, you know, again, you're expecting top runners to maybe do, you know, two or three BMCs, and you want to reward that rather than necessarily, you know, someone of a lower level doing five BMCs. So, you know, there's a lot to think about there, but I wouldn't rule out us doing non-paced races, and I wouldn't rule us out from doing some sort of final. We'd welcome ideas. We'd welcome, anyone's welcome to get in contact and say what it is they want. That's what we're there for, responding to what people want.
Absolutely. Well, Tim, you're doing a fantastic job. That's clear to see. What's the PB count at the moment then? The percentage of PBs so far in 2026, please remind us.
I think I can't remember it exactly. It's normally around the 45% or something like that at this stage of the season.
Fantastic.
We had the record was Millfield this year, which was 80% PBs, which is a pretty good deal if you turn up with that chance of running your best.
Jesus, yeah, that is terrific, bloody hell! Yeah. And so to look forward, we've got a gold standard at Watford shortly. We've got the St Mary's Grand Prix on the 9th of August, and we've got the two team record breaker
on the
18th or 19th, which is because of, like you said, where it's positioned in the calendar. Next year, Worlds are going to be in September. I think the Olympics are in September. That sort of mid-August meeting is going to be very, very popular from internationals. It has been over the last few years. And so potentially that's the meeting which grows and expands.
They're very popular, and you've got so many overseas athletes staying around that London area, southwest London, that, you know, it makes sense to have those meetings there.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Tim.
Yeah.
We will see you soon. I'll look forward to the St. Mary's Grand Prix myself.
Yeah. You're on to you too.
I'm indeed, like you. So yeah, have a great week.
Yeah, Andrew, great job. Thanks,
Tim.
Thanks. Yeah, bye.
There you have it. Great to chat to Tim Brennan there, co-chairman and Grand Prix director at the BMC. And I think it's nice to hear from Tim how open they are to suggestions from people. So obviously, if you guys are listening and you have suggestions from the BMC, I mean, I'm not going to tell everyone to keep flooding his email inbox, but I'm sure that they'll take that on board. And it's true, like you said, they do respond to the needs of the athletes, and it's not the BMC's fault that every athlete just wants to go and race for PBs and doesn't want to engage with championships, which I think is something that can be occasionally misconstrued, right? We'll do on this podcast at times. We'll say, people need to kind of race more and learn a bit more racecraft rather than always running in pace races. But yeah, that's not the BMC's fault. The BMC are providing loads of opportunities for people to go and run their personal best.
They are indeed. Look, on ideas, how the BMC can move forward, continues to be the beast it is. We do have a listener, Ryan Elston. Let's get him on. So we welcome Ryan Elston. Ryan, did you pace Stonia? Was that you? You did a lot of pacing at the previous BMC. On the topic of BMCs, you've done a lot of pacing at the Watford.
Yes, yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so me and Matt obviously trained together at Loughborough, both under Chris and Sonia. So we had the plan for a few weeks. He knew Watford was the one he wanted to aim towards. So yeah, I had the pleasure of pacing him in that B race. Yeah, as you say, do a lot of pacing. So on the same day, did the men's 800A as well. So can't lie, I was a little bit nervous before it, doing a 50.5 and then a 156 for Matt for his first race back with all the Loughborough contingent on the side about 50 minutes later, but it went really well in the end, so you can't complain.
You can't, dude, you're in shape. When are you gonna go run a 3:41?
I know. Well, I ran 3:43 last year. I don't know if I'm really in the 15 shape this year, but that's what everyone was saying. You've got to go and do it. But just hitting a couple of eights. As we were just talking about, listening to the last bit of the conversation with Tim there. So looking forward to St Mary's and to Tim Beck as well to hopefully get my own time down a little bit more this season.
Good man. Look, what suggestions do you have? You caught the end of our convo last week's episode on the podcast. you caught Tim's conversation there. Basically, we think the BMC is at a crossroads where can it level up? Can it get that bronze label, even silver? Can we start to see those 332, 333 races consistently on the men's side, your sub fours or your 4.0s on the women's side? Like, do you think that's where the BMC needs to go, or is it serving its purpose and does it need to sort of stay in its lane?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, to start off, I think I love how BMCs, you go for PBs. You're entering a BMC Grand Prix and you know exactly what you're going there for. And I think everybody's going there for PBs and to run quick times and to try and get qualification standards. I think it serves its purpose great in that way. So I do understand the argument in terms of BMCs for, like, we need more tactical racing to get ready for championships and stuff. But I mean, as you guys have touched on a little bit before, I think it would be cool to have a final. So maybe like a point scoring system in the Grand Prix, which then leads into a final. So I don't know, maybe in the A and B race, you score certain points, depending on your finish. And then let's say you do minimum three, and then your points at the end of the season, you can qualify for a final, maybe like 12 and a 1500 or 8 and an 800. And then that would have a few like surprise picks. So there might be like a couple guys, for example, who are running like 345, 346, but they do well in terms of their placings at Grand Prix. They end up in the final with the 333 guy. And I think that would be so cool to see, to like sneak into those sorts of finals. That was a little bit of a back burner idea that I kind of had on my mind. But then since you guys have been talking about that, it's one I thought I'd kind of shoot straight into. But I do think the Grand Prix, it seems to me, and after speaking to people recently, especially I was with some Australian guys in Finland. I was pacing in Finland a couple of weeks ago and with some Australian guys there having dinner. And they're like, these BMCs you guys do, like, they just seems like they'll just turn into tactical races. With the prize money, it seems like everyone's getting bunched and it's turning too tactical. And they come over here and obviously they want to run quick. And Europeans and all the top standard guys across the continent will look at the BMCs and see what the winning times are and see what the top five times are. And I think to attract that sort of talent and turn it into that like top level, like bronze or silver standard in Europe, I think the winning times just need to be quicker. Like you look at like Watford Grand Prix, for example, and it's one in 340 and it's not breaking sub 340. And even the eight, 146, it's like, it's good. But like nowadays, the top level meets in Europe are running 144 at least, really. So I think potentially a way of helping this is the winner of the races in 8, 15, 3K, 5K, let's say 400 into an 8 or 8 into a 15, whoever's leading there, and if they win the race, let's say they get like a 20% bonus on prize money or something like that. So it just prompts them to get after it and lead it out. So for example, when I paced that 800A race at Watford, it was only Will Rabjohns that went with it. And he said to me before the race, I know him from Loughborough, and he said, I'm just going to get on it. I'm just going to go for it. Then everyone else sat behind in a pack and maybe conserved energy a little bit more, went through and maybe like 51.5 instead of 50.5. And that probably is a smarter way to run a 144 or 145. Yeah. Maybe not a 50 point something. But I just have, you got so much time for somebody who just gets after it and just wants to, you know what? I'm just going to go for it. And if everybody had that same mindset, because, they're prompted by this little bit more prize money or something, then I think that could just help times to come tumbling down in those A and B races. Because yeah, we want to help all of the races down to the GH races, but I think ultimately to try and get it to those top level European races, the winning times at the moment from where I'm looking at it just aren't really quick enough.
So do you think that's more of a race problem rather than the athletes that are competing?
Yeah. I think the athletes are more than capable. Like you're looking at PBs of these guys who are on start lines, and like that 800 race, for example, there's 144, 145 guys in there. And to be run at this point in the season when most athletes are peaking, to be running like 146, like it's not bad, but like I think most, or pretty much all of those athletes in that race would have wanted to run quicker. And I mean, it was hot, but I don't want to just single out that race because I feel like it's kind of occurring at a lot of the Grand Prix this season and over the last couple of seasons. So that's one idea that sprung to mind for me.
You do touch upon a good idea there, because it is, I've noticed that as well, especially the A races, it does get cagey. And there's no coincidence that Tooting at the end of the season, the last couple of years, has been very fast because there's internationals. And they're the ones often, you know, previous years we've had Nick Griggs come over. He's bridging the gap. He's happy to sort of front run and pull a load of people with him. I think, to be fair to Fogg, he might have done that a couple of years ago or last year as well. But I remember Sam Tanner as well on the men's side. Yeah, and then, of course, we've had Whiteman and Patterson and others. But and so there's no coincidence that Tooting is quick, but you're right, in the BMCs, I think there's a little bit on the athletes as well. They're hesitant. No one wants to be that one in behind the pacemaker, because if you're that one in behind the pacer, you know the minute they pull out, especially in a 15, you're effectively leading for 700 or 600 until everyone tries and comes past you on the last 100. So, yeah, potentially a little bit of prize money for halfway through the race, a little bit more of a payday. Might be basically an extension of being a pacer, isn't it? You're willing to commit to leading at halfway.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how much that would incentivize, but you can't really think of too much else. As you say, they're just getting too cagey and everyone's tripping over each other a little bit too much, especially in the 15s.
Time bonuses at the end of the race, which they do have. The BMC do have extra bonuses if you were to break. I think for the 15, it might be something like 3:37, 3:36, and 3:34 or something other. You unlock a little bit more cash prize. And in the 5K, it's like 13:40, 13:30, 13:20, those sorts of marks. So they do have an extra time incentive, but I guess it's just not enough for people to really warrant getting after it midway through a race like that.
Yeah, that is true. So that is what I was thinking when I was thinking of this, is how much would that extra little bonus really incentivize people to get after it? I don't know. It's a tricky one, but I think it's to take the BMC really to these A races to that next level. I think, yeah, the winning times just need to be quicker. And I think there's probably a couple of things that can be done to help that.
Yeah. And on the races themselves then, because there's no doubt they get a great 10 women, 10 men on a start line, or 15 if it's 1500 or whatever, and they pull great fields together and they get loads of fast people in one place. But you were down at Watford. Watford is always a good atmosphere, is a good buzz. And actually, yeah, I was commenting, it was very noisy for Stonia's race. Good for him and you. But do you think they could be a little bit smarter about creating more of an atmosphere at their meetings? You know, when you look at what Highgate were able to do, I know it's in the 10,000, but this is what me and Lolly were talking about. Could they have a flagship event, which really, like, okay, the focus is obviously on racing, but also can we get more spectators in the door? Can we get more of an atmosphere at these meets?
Yeah, I think absolutely. The atmosphere, like, between races, it's completely made by the athlete. So you'll see it for certain races, like it will just get loud for certain races, depending who's in the race and what mates are racing, and yeah, popular people like Matt on that day. But I think there can be so much more done for atmosphere, for sure, especially at some of the lesser venues. So maybe if you go to like a Bury BMC Grand Prix or something like that, and you're going up north and it's windy and you're jogging around, and then you kind of go on the track, like if there's music going on, or like a live DJ, I don't know, something else just to really, really up the ante a little bit. Yeah, I think that's a big thing that could just be helped to bring spectators in as well. As you say, I think the spectator levels are pretty good generally, and obviously like ticket prices to get in and that sort of thing are not really bad. But yeah, I mean, you see what happens when you have loads of people screaming down the back straight when Matt's racing, and when you get like Cooper Tier there, for example, who was there a couple of years ago. When you get these sorts of big names and people that everyone know, the BMC can be unbelievable down the back straight, and I think that's just so good for everyone to see.
Yeah, they're doing a lot right, I think. Yeah, a couple small tweaks and adjustments, they could have a really special event back end of the season. Announcing names, I always think it's a bit of a shame the start list come out so late, but we know why, and that's because there's so many people withdrawing. Start lists are chopping and changing, everyone's in different shape, big names dropping out, etc. So it's difficult for them to go public with those start lists, but I think for some of those big A races, you want to go as early as possible with the start list to get that excitement of people wanting to go down and watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a big opportunity as well. I've been talking to my mate, avid listener of the pod, Caleb Stevenson, who I lived with a few years at Loughborough. And he's a big British superbikes fan, and basically one thing they do is they do like a behind the scenes YouTube video of all the different races. And I think this kind of takes it away from what we've been talking about in terms of performances and stuff. But I think there's such an opportunity for every BMC Grand Prix to get like a Charlie McCarthy style videographer down, maybe from Adidas or Sports Shoes or one of the sponsors, get down and maybe follow like four or five different athletes of all ranges. So maybe like you get a couple in the A races, but then you get a few who are having great seasons who are doing the F race, and it's like one of their first Grand Prix. And you follow these different athletes, you speak to them before and during and afterwards. Obviously, they'd want to consent to it so it doesn't put too much pressure on them on race day and that sort of thing. But I think it would be great for, because when you've got to go, for example, do the BMC vlogs when at Loughborough or whatever, like everyone's so excited for it to come out and see them in the video. You love watching yourself afterwards. Yeah. Like you love watching your mates afterwards, see what they had to say. It's just such a, I don't know, it's such a cool thing, which I think they're missing out on. If they release like a 20-minute long form YouTube video, say like the Tuesday or the Wednesday after a BMC Grand Prix, it kind of sustains that hype as well. And it gives more of a loop for sponsors to get in, like Adidas Sports Shoes. It gives them so much more eyeballs. I think videos would get over, looking at like what you've got to go do, and in terms of viewing numbers, I think they'd get at least 1K views on these videos on if they like promote it well enough on Instagram, etc. So I think there's such an opportunity there, and that's one of the big things me and Caleb were talking about, and one of the things I wanted to bring to the pod.
Yeah, easily.
I think you've got to go is particularly special though, because it's not polished. I think that makes it better. Those sort of raw reactions on the sidelines, that, people taking the piss of one another, I think makes it even better.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it can't be too polished. I think if BMC were to do something similar, it can't be ultra like TV ready. It has to be a little bit raw as well. But yeah, I think it's a bit of a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, they almost need to like target a few athletes and say, can you make something yourself, rather than create their own thing? So I feel like if, say, Sports Shoes or the BMC were going to make it, they would want to make something that was quite polished, put out. But actually, if you target a few athletes who you know want to make vlogs and things like that, and say, oh, well, if you come to this meet, we're going to chuck a bit of cash at you or give you some free entries if you do make a little vlog about it, then that might be the way to keep it
going. It's an advertising tool. Advertising tool to bring in those international stars. I agree. I mean, Ryan, anything before you go, anything else to add? What about you as a performer right now? Actually, you are, in the midst of your season. Do you enjoy the British calendar as it currently is? When you sit down at the start of the season as a 343 guy, what is there for you to aim at beyond British Myers Club?
Yeah, I think I do still enjoy it, I have to say. So I'm mainly an 800 runner, do a couple 15s here and there. But like looking at the calendar at the start of the season, I'll always sit down with Chris and Sonia in like April time, and we'll have a look. And we'll go, right, we'll open up with there's enough like BMC goal standards or something for you to just go down on a Wednesday and just open up with something with like not too much pressure, go down to Birmingham or Watford or something and have a hit out at an 8 or 15. And then you can kind of like look at the Grand Prix throughout the year and you go, okay, they're probably bankers as well. And then I think for me, so I've done the Senior British Champs the last 5 years, so that will always be one that I'll aim for. Kind of fortunate in the way that I do have that Champs to aim for. I do think, obviously, with the England Champs being just pretty much non-existent nowadays, there isn't as many championships for the mass runners in the UK to aim towards, especially if you're not university, because obviously I've done Bucks Champs a few times while I was at Loughborough. So I'd look at Bucks, I'd look at British Champs, and have those few different championships as well. So that would be a little bit fun. But yeah, I feel like if you're not getting British Champ standards, if you're not a university, you wouldn't be as excited because there isn't the championships. So I think that's where, yeah, like a BMC final or something you were talking about with Tim before in terms of climax, where there is a mix of championship racing as well, would be proper beneficial to the masses who are doing these BMC events.
Yeah. And one final thing, actually, BMC membership and race entry,
worth it?
Yeah.
Do people dispute that in Loughborough? Do people dispute sometimes the entry fee or the membership?
I think and naturally when anything goes up, when anything increases, like people are like, why? Oh my God, I can't believe it's this much nowadays. But even yes, so I entered Tooting yesterday and just like seeing it 20 quid, you're a BMC member and seeing a 20 quid entry fee, you do kind of grit your teeth a little bit. But you just want to see. You want to see like improvements year on year in terms of what it offers and if the price goes up. And I think like the things that Sports Shoes and Adidas are doing, so like giving free shoes to the winners and that sort of thing does kind of recoup that, because you know that if you're going to win the race, you're going to get free shoes. So that sort of thing does help. So yeah, people do kind of grit their teeth if it goes up, but it's not out of the realms.
Worth it for a PB.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Mate, well, look, good luck here. Good luck for the rest of your season. Thank you very much for coming on and speak soon.
Thank you very much, guys. Cheers for having me.
Cheers, Ryan. Cheers. See ya.
Bye.
There you have it. So we've heard from Tim. We've heard from Ryan, the chairman's view, the athlete's view. And I think that pretty much wraps us up, mate, doesn't it?
Believe it does. There is not too much to break. I mean, Commie starts on Monday. So next week, we'll get a couple episodes out, be commies. Our plan is to do a bit of a rehearsal for Euros. I think that's going to be the spicy championships of the summer.
Although that commies mile.
The commies mile. That's Saturday.
That's
a week Saturday is the commies mile. But effectively what we want to do for the commies and for the Euros is get people on to break down the performances. You know, the day after the men's 15 final, the day after the women's 8 final, or the 5K finals or whatever. If you're someone, especially if you're someone who has is relatively close to that athlete, or maybe you have a little bit of inside intel, amazing. You don't have to be. We just want honest, raw opinions, and we want to just break down performances with you guys. We'll do it anyway. We'll be publishing.
Yeah, we'll be
episodes.
Here anyway.
Yeah, we'll be publishing episodes every couple of days through Commies and Europeans, probably just with the schedule being so packed at Euros, probably every day or every other day at least. And so we'd love to do that with a bit of company as well and have some good debates on performances and who's looking good ahead of finals, preview, review, all that jazz. But yeah, we'll get that going as of next week. Back with another guest episode this Sunday. Enjoy that one. I caught up with Clara Lucan, the only European to break 30 minutes in the 10K. Faster than Battocletti, faster than McColgan, Jana van Lent, Megan Keith. 29.50 earlier this year, the Slovenian star, and she is actually preparing for the European Championships herself. But very, very interesting character, Lum. It's a good episode. Enjoy that one this Sunday, but otherwise we'll speak to you all next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for listening, guys. Catch you very soon.